Congress has decided suddenly to increase the Navy, the young officer explained, and the orders are going out to build 12 ships in haste. One of the contracts is to come to you if you will take it. They are even in such need that they have not had time to draw up full plans, so the man who builds this ship and the officer who superintends the instruction can really have something to say about the design. He looked his old friend very steadily in the eye and saw a slow smile of deep unspoken delight dawn upon the shipbuilder's face. Jonathan Adams' hard hands did not often tremble, but they shook a little now as he reached up to the shelf above the bench and brought down his model. "I have been thinking about such a design since I was 10 years old," he said, "and the chance to build it has come at last. We will make them a real ship, Humphrey, and the whole world will open its eyes when it sees you sail her." Building the ship. She grew up quickly on the ways, that ship of theirs, with her bowsprit standing far out above the neighboring street, and with people stopping in the lane to watch Jonathan's whole force of workmen toiling up and down her sides. Old Navy officers, some of whom had seen the ships of the Revolutionary War, and who had all fought in the War of 1812, would inspect her and would shake their heads. "Look at that sharp bow and narrow hull," one would say. "Such a ship will never be seaworthy in the world. Why can't these young fellows stick to the models we have tried out for them?" "And see the spread of sail this drawing shows," another would comment, pointing fiercely with a stubby forefinger. "Why, the whole ridiculous affair will capsize in the first good puff of wind. I'm thankful I don't have to go to sea in her." But the two comrades closed their ears and sat, often far into the night, in the cramped little office, poring over drawings and comparing designs.